Now, we engage in economic activity every single day, but like with many technological marvels, we don't always know quite how the economy works. Well, tonight you can hear more about Australia's economy and the key issues affecting it at a free discussion featuring Senator Sarah Hanson-Young and Chief Economist at the Australia Institute, Richard Dennis. It'll also feature beers, probably. Richard's joining us on the line now. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Now, it's a complicated and often impenetrable subject, the economy, especially for those of us who find it a little bit dazzling. What do you think is most important for people to understand about how it works?
Look, I think the first thing is that people should feel free, people should understand that it's okay to ask simple questions. I mean, if we go to the doctor and they tell us something we don't understand, we're encouraged to ask for a better explanation or a second opinion. But when politicians or business leaders or other people talk about the economy, they often do so in a language that no one listening understands. Well, if the politician understands or the business person understands, then if they really understood, they could make it clear to their audience. So I think it's really important to understand that one of the reasons the public are so confused is actually quite deliberate. There's a lot of econobabble thrown at them when as citizens they should feel free to seek a good explanation.
Now, as an economist who would see the discourse in the public realm, in the wider media and the like, what do you think is a common misconception that is thrown around?
Oh, I think there's so much that's thrown around that confuses people. But the main thing, I think, is that if we don't do particular things, that the economy will be ruined. That if we don't cut the corporate tax rate, the economy will be ruined. If we don't cut wages, the economy will be ruined. And if we look around the world, there's nearly 200 countries in the world. There's incredible diversity in the way that they've organised their economies. And there's just no evidence that there's one thing we have to do. So I think people should feel far less scared that if we don't do something, the sky will fall, and understand that we live in one of the richest countries in the world at the richest point in world history. We're far richer than we were 30 or 40 years ago. So how could it be that we can't afford to spend as much on health or education as we used to? How can it be that we used to be able to do things that we can't do anymore? And of course, the answer is because we're making different choices than we used to. We used to pay more tax. We used to spend more money on services. We've been cutting taxes for decades now, which is okay. We're not the highest tax country in the world. We're not the lowest tax country in the world. But when governments cut taxes year after year, then inevitably they're going to spend less on schools and roads and hospitals. So if that's the kind of society we want, if we want to be more like America, we can be. If we want to be more like Sweden or Germany, we can be. These other countries are perfectly profitable, perfectly prosperous, perfectly functioning democracies. They're just making different choices to us. And we as citizens need to be clear what kind of country we want to live in, not be scared into agreeing to things because they're good or bad for the economy.
Now, that raises a key issue there, which is how do we decide the type of country that we want to live in, and especially then how will the economic policies reflect that? Now, you're going to be speaking at a Politics at the Pub event. This is sort of a bit more of a grassroots kind of discussion where you're talking with people about the type of world that we want to get to. What are the sort of things you expect people will bring to the bar this evening?
Look, I mean, one of the main questions, people always ask me is, if the economy's been growing for so long, why aren't things getting better? And that's a great question. Similarly, people often want to know why it is that, as I said before, we can't afford to do things that we could afford to do 10 or 20 years ago. And the kind of answers that usually get thrown at people, globalization or international markets or, they're just econobabble. They're just words that don't really have any meaning. The important answer, the interesting answer, is because our state and national leaders have made particular decisions that come with particular consequences. There's no right and wrong in economics, and there's no right and wrong in democracy, but I think a lot of people have been pushed a long way from feeling like they have a say in the decision-making process. So again, you know, we just need to look around the world and think, what do we wish we had more of and what do we wish we had less of? And we there's nothing stopping us making those choices, except perhaps a fear campaign that said that if we tried some things, the sky would fall.
What sort of values do you feel are at the heart of current sort of economic policy that's coming out of our current government?
Yeah, look, good question. I mean, you know, governments of all persuasions like to talk about the Anzac spirit of how people stick together and, you know, help each other out in adversity. But if you look at Australian policy for the last 10 or 20 years, I don't think there's any evidence of any so-called Anzac spirit. I think we're increasingly become a very individual society in which, you know, we don't, rather than help people who fall on hard times, we're now quick to judge them and ask what it was about them that made them lose their job, what it was about them that made them be unemployed. Indeed, even asylum seekers, you know, people literally fleeing their home with nothing. We wonder what their motives really are. So, you know, there's nothing in the Constitution that says we have to be generous. There's nothing in the Constitution that says we have to help people in times of adversity. Once upon a time we did. We seem to do that less and less. It's an entirely democratic question if that's the direction we want to go in or not. Certainly some countries have gone a lot further than that. Our unemployment benefits are more generous than some countries that have no support for the unemployed. But according to the OECD, Australia's unemployment benefits are amongst the most stingy in the world, so in the developed world. Again, no right or wrong answer to that, but when someone loses their job in a car factory, you know, what do we want their income to fall to? $300 a week? Well, in Australia, it's less than that.
We're speaking with Chief Economist of the Australia Institute, Richard Dennis, ahead of the Politics in the Pub event tonight. Now, Richard, you'll be speaking with Senator Sarah Hanson-Young this evening. Is this the first time you'll be in conversation, public conversation with her?
I think it is. I've met Senator Hanson-Young before, but yeah, I think this is the first time we've done this sort of public event, and look, I think it's a great initiative, and, you know, really politics and, in turn, debate about the economy can't just be something that happens on the radio. It can't be something, you know, just businessmen talking to politicians all the time. If we as a society want to have a vibrant democracy, then we need to engage everyone in a conversation about what the national interest is. There's no right answer to that. It's an entirely democratic question. Again, what do we want more of? What do we want less of? Some people in Australia at the moment want to cut the corporate tax rate. $65 billion in lost revenue. Well, that's okay. There's no law against that. But if we do that, what are we going to spend $65 billion less on? That's the democratic question. Now, of course, some people say, relax, it'll be okay. Cutting company taxes will grow the economy so much that we'll never even notice it. Well, a lot of economists, myself included, would say, gee, that seems a bit optimistic. And when we look around the world at governments that have tried that after it didn't work, they wound up cutting the spending on health and education. So, you know, politics in the pub, hopefully tonight we'll talk about all those things. But really it's about saying to people, this is their conversation. You know, everyone needs to talk about the national interest, because as a society, we won't agree on everything. But we need to talk to each other, and we need to hear what other people think are our priorities, because if we can't unite behind our priorities, we won't succeed them. And if we keep getting divided, well, then perhaps things will keep going as badly as people feel they are at the moment.
Now, are there certain shared or even opposing values that drew you towards this conversation with Senator Hanson-Young?
Oh, look, there's plenty of things that I think we've got in common. I think, you know, most economists and many environmentalists think that tackling climate change, for example, is a good idea. But then again, that's hardly a unanimous opinion in Australia. And if we as a democracy can't agree to do simple things like stop building new coal mines, indeed stop subsidising new coal mines, or introduce a simple carbon tax, if we can't agree to do those things, then our greenhouse gas emissions will continue to rise. Again, there's nothing in the Constitution that says we have to tackle climate change, but there are a lot of scientists saying it seems like a good idea. So if we listen to the evidence, the scientific evidence and the economic evidence, we can find a way forward. But if as a society we don't want to do that, well, there's regrettable consequences, but I guess that's the problem with living in a democracy.
Now, banks are a huge part of our economy. Money sort of flows through them. They've been copping a lot of flack lately, probably rather fairly because of the results of the Royal Commission as that's been carrying on. I mean, if we can't trust banks to provide us with decent financial advice and to keep our money safe, why do we have them?
Yeah, good question. But remember, it was only 6 months ago that the banks and indeed the government were saying, we don't need a Royal Commission into the banks. Had lots of inquiries. It'll be a waste of time. It'll be a waste of money. Now it turns out that we've got the CEOs of major financial institutions admitting under oath that they've lied to our regulators about what they're doing. So, look, unfortunately, in our capital system, in a capitalist system, in a system such as Australia's, we rely on the fact that companies want to maximise their profit. That's okay. That's a great way to encourage people to set up cafes. It's a great way to encourage people to produce the food we eat, the cars we drive. But an inevitable consequence of that is that desire to maximise profit often comes at customers' expense. We know that. It's not a new problem. And capitalism has dealt with that for centuries through strong regulation that's enforced by strong regulators. And I think it's quite obvious what's happened in the banks. Yes, we should blame people for lying. Yes, we should blame people for breaking the law. Indeed, I hope we send some people who've stolen money and lied about it to jail. But really, we have to ask ourselves, how were our regulators so easily conned? Why were our regulators so weak? Why were they so quick to take assertions from these CEOs that everything was fine at face value? So I really hope the Royal Commission will show the public and our politicians that it's our job to keep the banks in line. You know, it's terrible that they've stolen money from vulnerable people, but it's terrible that no one stepped in to stop them before now.
Now, a lot of these conversations really do seem to come back to values, come back to culture. What's the actual, like people look back at the Whitlam model, some people quite romantically and some people, with quite disdain. Is it feasible to really go with a values first sort of system when approaching the economy?
Well, of course it is. Indeed, that's all we've ever done. So, of course, Robert Menzies was a big fan of the universal age pension. He wasn't at all interested in mutual obligation. He thought that everyone should be proud to get an age pension, not ashamed. Yes, of course, Whitlam introduced some big changes. But, look at countries like Germany with free education. Look at countries like Finland and Sweden that have 12-month parental leave paid. And indeed, not so much obligations, but strong encouragement for men to take that paid parental leave as well. If we want to compare ourselves to low-tax, low-income countries in Southeast Asia and say, we have to have a system like theirs, we can. Or if we want to look at Northern Europe, we can compare ourselves to that. Or we might find our own entirely Australian way of organising things, which would be my preference. But there's no definition of what's in the national interest. And I've never met a politician that said that values don't matter. If values don't matter, why do we waste time with celebrating Anzac Day? If values don't matter, why did politicians spend so much time worrying about same-sex marriage? All politicians bring their values to these debates. The question is, are voters making sure that the parliamentarians' values reflect their own?
Well, Richard, it's been a great discussion this morning, and if we're keen to carry the conversation on to tonight at Politics in the Pub, where should we go?
It's the King's Head Hotel on 357 King William Street, and we're kicking off at 6 o'clock.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for joining us on the program.
Great. Thank you.
Richard Dennis there, Chief Economist at the Australia Institute. You head along to the King's Head tonight on King William Road if that conversation sparks an interest in you.